second case for oral argument this morning is the people of the state of South Dakota in the interest of J.H., a minor child, and also concerning B.H. and J.H. respondents. For the appellants, we have Mr. Michael Butler, an attorney from Sioux Falls, and for the appellee state, we have Mr. John Strowman, an assistant attorney general from Pierre. Mr. Butler, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
Mr. Chief Justice and members of the court, thank you. I appear here today on behalf of J.H., who at the age of 16 found himself accused of committing multiple acts of rape, attempted rape on his wrestling teammates. The allegations were that during the school year of 2005 and 2006, specifically the wrestling season, J.H. had attempted to or did actually digitally penetrate the rectum of a number of his teammates. We had a court trial, and the court trial sustained those counts that actually went to trial and found attempted rape, adjudicated him not guilty of actually raping anybody. This case, in order for it to be, I think, fairly considered, must be placed in context and not considered in a vacuum. I begin with the simple question of why would a man hand his hand in the place that J.H. did when these events occurred? You wouldn't do it under normal circumstances, but you do in a wrestling environment. I think it is important also to understand further the time frame and context in which this occurred. According to the principal of the school, who was the head wrestling coach, who was the athletic director, Joe Meyer, school would end at 21 minutes past 3 o'clock. Wrestling would start at approximately 3:30 to 3:35. That would mean the students or wrestlers would go to the lockers, put their books away, go to the locker room, get changed, and go up on the mats. And it is in that narrow frame of time that it is alleged that all but two of the attempted rapes occurred. Now, what makes this even more difficult to comprehend in terms of the allegations is the following facts, which are not, I believe, addressed at all in the findings. The testimony was that not a single wrestler who alleged that he had been raped or the attempt had been made upon him, complained to a parent, to a coach, and even more importantly, they never said anything to each other throughout the whole wrestling season. Consistently, the testimony was, in response to direct questions, did you tell a teammate? Answers, no. Nothing was ever said, and so you must ask yourself, is it rational to infer under those circumstances that these forcible rapes were occurring to these other wrestlers? That is not addressed in these findings. What is also important is to discuss in this context what it was that was being done. When J.H. was questioned by law enforcement and told there were allegations that he had put his finger in the rectum of some of these wrestlers, he immediately responded, and the exhibit is in the record, both the videotape as well as the transcript of his interrogation with Dunfer's parents present, in which J.H. immediately responds, it's called skinning, what we call it. It's called a butt drag. If you're wrestling somebody, they're in under your legs or something, you know, you move around, the only time I ever done that is in a wrestling environment or in a wrestling room. You know, it's a wrestling move. His coach testified to the grand jury and at trial, Don LaRocca,
You know, if we could back off for just a minute there. You know, it's one thing to make that argument, but it's, you know, when you accept the fact that it's a defensive move in wrestling, when someone comes at you aggressively, and you're trying to turn them and spin them around. But how do you, you know, so in a wrestling context, okay, but how do you do that if it happens either in the back of the bus or if it happens before or after practice, or someone is there holding this person down so this defensive move can be exerted?
And the testimony was that this move may have been done in wrestling and may have been done under circumstances that you described, and it was further described as horse play. Now, what corroborates that statement by J.H.? The testimony of two of the alleged victims, A.L.H., A.D.H., both of who are victims, both of whom testified nothing ever happened to them that they considered anything other than messing around. These twin brothers were cousins of two others. They testified they never saw anything that they considered inappropriate. And that testimony is detailed in my brief, right down to the page number. They said had they saw something inappropriate, they would have reported it. One of the two twins said he remained friends of J.H. throughout the whole wrestling season. They horsed around, they wrestled together, they testified, we did things that you couldn't do in a match. Two wrestlers jumping on one and things of that nature. That went on throughout the year. But two of the victims, friends of the other alleged victims, characterized this as nothing other than horseplay. That is not in the findings made by the court. And how do you reconcile? I was digitally penetrated. I've been victimized by brute force, and this is my friend. And we go in day in and day out and practice throughout the year. That's why I say to Justice Sabers, context matters.
But does horseplay justify an attempt to penetrate a rectum of someone else? The attempt, does horseplay justify the attempt to penetrate someone else's rectum?
First off, the testimony was, in this case, by J.H., that was not the intent on his part. His intent was, when it was done, was performing a variation of that move. And when you go and look, watch the CD that was introduced, the first part of the state's trial, they introduced a CD of J.H. in the 2006 final championship match. The reason they did it is because he performed this skinny move on another wrestler. It was their evidence. They brought an expert from Colorado, a guy who's coached wrestling for years, says that's an inappropriate application of the move. You never put your hand down in such a place that you would find your fingers in that location. In turn, the findings of fact made to this court detail that witness's testimony. What the findings of fact don't detail is his coach testified, Don LaRocca, I teach that move such that you put force on the rectum, in the area of the rectal opening. He said, that's a correct application of the move. So when you go to the intent of the wrestler, you ask yourself, not what does an outside observer think in terms of how he's doing it, but rather, how was he taught to do it? Because it has everything to do with state of mind. When you're in front of 5,000 people, and you're on public TV, and the mat's surrounded by 10 officials, all of which can be seen, and you've got your hand where you had that hand, you're not going to do it unless you think it's appropriate under those circumstances.
But he wasn't. I mean, as I read the judge's decision, the judge isn't finding him guilty of attempted rape in connection with wrestling, any wrestling move. As I understand it, he's accepting the testimony of the other boys that say that this wasn't a wrestling move at all. This was some kind of act of bullying where they were dragged to the back of the bus or they were pulled off the wall. Somebody held them down and your client simply inserted his finger. It wasn't anything to do with skinning or that. I mean, if the court accepts that version, how do we overturn that?
Let's look at the consistency and the findings with the facts developed. When you, and this is why I say in a vacuum, One of the rest is, I'll take TC for beginners. First one right out of the chute. Testifies this happened to me at least two occasions. This same young man, when he was interviewed by law enforcement, also accused JH of teabagging. He said JH pulled his pants down and sat on his face. He also said he witnessed JH do it to another wrestler, DK. Now, as the investigation developed, they went and talked to DK. DK said, that never happened to me. Later, when he testified at trial, TC said, and it's documented, he said, you know, I guess I was wrong about that. I didn't see him do it. I found out by going and talking to DK. Now, this wrestling room is the size of one large mat, according to the testimony of TC. And he said, other people witnessed the teabag. Nobody witnessed it. That was a false and made-up charge on his part, but nothing in the court's findings. When the court says, I simply choose to believe one version of it, I submit the court has some obligation to reconcile manifest contradictions. And TC then says, you know what? It wasn't JH that sat on me after all. I recant and withdraw that. It was another guy that did it, EK. So I ask, how did you find out it was someone other than him? He said, I talked to my peers. They told me. So each wrestler, each accuser who was asked, did you see or did you tell TC that he was teabagged? No, no, no. In fact, he gave names of the people who told him. They were asked, never saw it. Now, that is a wild allegation to make, dropping your pants, sitting in your face, in a restroom. That's not the kind of thing you're going to forget if you see it. So how can he claim it happened to him, J.H. did it, and I saw him do it to another kid, and then later say, no, it didn't. This is the same witness who testified to the grand jury when asked, why didn't you tell anybody during the year about what J.H. was doing? He responded at that time, I don't know. At trial in February, when he was asked, why didn't you say anything? He says, because I was threatened. I was told if I did it, it's going to, if I talk, it'll be worse for me. And so I asked this young man about that, and I think his answers are revealed. And I would ask, why wouldn't the court in its findings try to reconcile these with the other facts? Answer, or I asked him, when did you remember that that happened, talking about the threat? He says, I tried and forgotten about the whole entire incident. And as time went on, I remembered more and more things that had happened. I'd be by myself in my room. I'd think of more incidents. I'd talk to people, and they'd tell me what happened. And I'd remember someone else. Question. So sometimes people would talk to you, and that would help you remember stuff. Yeah, I have a very weird memory, he says. I could sit and think about something for hours, and then stop thinking about it for 5 minutes, and I'd forget about it. So when was it that he remembered it? Sometime in December. And he states the time he was sitting in his room, he might have been reading a book, and it just occurred to him I'd been threatened. Does that sound rational? Can the judge just simply say, I believe what the accusers have said, period. And I won't get into the fact that this young man, and then another one, made wild allegations about J.H. dropping his pants, which all blew up.
Isn't that part of the risk that you take when you go before one man on a court trial as opposed to a 12-person jury?
Well, it wasn't a risk. We had no choice. We had to have a court trial at this juvenile adjudication. But nonetheless, when you have a case that is before the court... Well,
you could have... it's my recollection that you...
Stayed in adult court.
Pardon?
Stayed in adult
You could have stayed in adult court.
I suppose that is
okay.
True. In this
let me ask you this before you go on, because I think the problem here is really how deeply or at what level, to what level must a trial court go in resolving every conceivable dispute of fact or issue of credibility? Because you're certainly right to some extent that there are some things that may not be totally resolved, you know, by a specific finding. But we all know from trying cases that the trial courts cannot make a finding on every conceivable dispute of fact. And that's, you know, your case is difficult because I don't know where you draw that line, but you're in that quagmire of where do you draw the line. I agree with you that you can't just say, I find incredible and there'd be nothing else. But there is more than that here.
Well, interestingly, he didn't find incredible to the extent that the ones who claimed they penetrated were. So he sort of half accepted that allegation. But your point is well taken, and I'll try to address it. And again, the broader context, I think we can all agree on something. This is an unusual factual backdrop to a rape charge. So you're saying, how did it get to that point? A young man who's taught a move by a coach that says this is how you do it, that gets in the wrestling room, and as he says, well, I don't know, in the context of goofing around, this could happen. And it's happened to me, and other people do it. I'm not the only one. When does it become rape? That's the critical question, obviously, the judge had to decide in this case. But in considering whether it was, ask this, and again, it's not addressed in the findings per se. I have four coaches who testified, both at the transfer hearing and at the trial. Not one observed or noted any discernible evidence that there was something wrong going on between J.H. and his teammates. In fact, they testified the opposite. They looked up to him. They admired him. He helped him practice with those that weren't as good at doing certain wrestling moves. They said, Mr. Sattler said J.H. was a hero as far as he knew to the team, and they roomed together. At the end of the season, several of the wrestlers, including T.C. and I think A.L.A.P., went on wrestling trips together. Went to Spearfish, went to Omaha, went to Virginia Beach, and in the Spearfish case, T.C. drove in J.H.'s dad's car. Now, again, you ask yourself, the crime of rape is an infamous and brutal crime. Does it sound like they were raped in terms of their conduct or behavior? And when you ask yourself, I think the important question becomes of specific intent, which this is a specific intent crime, was it specific intent to penetrate or specific intent to do as he was taught, even if it was not an official match, not an official practice? Keep in mind, the testimony also established here by wrestlers who are alleged to be victims, that in the practice room, they would yell out, skin them. This is in the mind of a 16-year-old. We have to also, I think, look at it that way. To the extent that there is an effort to say that he's much bigger and stronger and older, J.H. was 16. Four of the others were 15. J.H. started school a year early. So chronologically, he was 1 year ahead, although, or in age, but 2 years ahead in school, with the exception of two of the other young men. But I want to continue on in this vein, and I guess ultimately you decide when the judge, how far a judge has to go in attempting to reconcile what I think in many cases is unreconcilable. It's not even harmonized to the point where there's some sort of acceptable version of the totality of the facts. Consider the bus incidents. I think these are good examples. You got R.F. and D.K. D.K., when he's interviewed, says, I was taken to the back of the bus and taken down on the floor, and J.H. put his finger between my butt cheeks and had his jeans up. Then he says, when he testifies to the grand jury, that in addition to himself, T.C. had the same thing happen to him. D.K. says he was threatened on the bus, although he failed to report it when he was interviewed, when he testified to the grand jury, and he said it's something he remembered later after the grand jury proceedings. But he also said his story could be corroborated by ALH and ADH because he told them about it. Both testified. He never told us that. Is that important, whether there's corroboration? At trial, he's asked, he says at trial, the other person involved in the bus was R.F., and he said, but you told the grand jury it was T.C. Well, he says it was dark. I just got it mixed up. T.C. testified, nothing ever happened to me in the bus. All the wrestlers on the bus, including four coaches, nobody saw this other than the two who said it happened at trial. Nobody. Are we going to assume that these coaches are indifferent to what goes on the bus? To think that that, as it was described, occurred, and not a fellow wrestler saw or observed or was told anything? Does it make sense? You ask yourself, well, does that make sense? that attempted rapes are occurring, and nobody, and this is not a full-size school bus. We introduced a picture of it. It is about half the size of a regular school bus. And one of the coaches down in Rocca says, I sit about right in the middle, halfway between the driving, and I look back to keep track of the bullets. Do we really think that happened? When nobody substantiates. The distinction that the court is drawing here, of course, assumes that the facts support his judgment, which is that the intent was to penetrate rather than another intent, which would be to apply the skinny move without the penetration. And the relevance of the court, or in that case at least the trial, was saying, well, it happened before the coaches got up there, therefore it's different than if it had been with coaches around and people yelling, skin them. Is that the distinction to draw between the intent to penetrate and commit rape versus if there had been people around and they were wrestling and there was some slight penetration? Mike Jorgensen, sanctioned wrestling official, has officiated 12 state wrestling matches. You're voted in by coaches to do that. Testify.
Your time has expired, Mr. Butler. Thank you. Mr. Strowman, you have 20 minutes, sir.
May it please the court, counsel. I'm John Strowman, representing the state of South Dakota in this matter. And I believe one of the most important places to start in this is an examination of the standard of review that this court will be looking at in application of the facts. And then I plan to walk through each of the counts with the evidence that the trial court looked at. The issue brought here was a challenge to the sufficiency of the evidence as it applies the law and the facts. The standard of review, as brought forth in Hague, is that there will not be a weighing of the evidence, a resolution of the conflicts, a determination of credibility by this court as it reviews the evidence. It's not whether this court would rule the same way, but whether a rational trier of fact, whether the evidence supported that he could reasonably reach the same conclusion. After reviewing the evidence, in Plenty Horse, it says that the light most favorable to prosecution is not that whether any trier of fact, it's whether no trier of fact would have found guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. So with these, I see that J.H. spends a lot of his facts and a lot of his arguments trying to claim that he was engaged in a wrestling move. The trial court heard from many experts on the subject, but there was not an expert even close to the elite ability of Mike MacArthur, a three-time junior national champion, the elite of high school freestyle wrestling, an All-American at the University of Minnesota, an Olympian with the Atlantic Games, a prior Olympic coach.
Coach LaRocca was in the Hall of Fame, Coaches Hall of Fame in Nebraska, so, I mean, certainly he had some credentials, too.
And Coach LaRocca, at 561 in the transcript, the hearing transcript, stated, quote, he never, ever told a kid to put his finger anyplace that was not proper, end quote. And he acknowledged, one of the questions asked to him in 560 was, sir, the move does not involve fingers inside someone's rectum, do they? And his answer, they do not.
Is that really relevant here? I mean, what the experts said, as I understand the judge's decision, the judge said this, he wasn't applying a wrestling move. The judge simply said that this was completely outside the sport of wrestling. It had to do with, I suppose the more charitable way to put it is that they were horsing around, and this was part of this was some kind of horseplay, and it went too far.
Well, I think there was horseplay, as J.H. claims, And I don't believe that's what the court found. And specifically, it did find that there was attempted rapes. And I think the reason why is, when you look first at count two, you see that TC is a ninth grader who's wrestling the 125-pound weight class. At the end of the season, JH was wrestling at 160 pounds, also was a state champion. We notice that none of our victims in this case are heavyweights, 185-pounders. The first attack against TC involved JH and EK jumping on him, and TC stated that JH took, quote, his finger and inserted it into my rear end, end quote. TC said he was screaming for 5 to 10 seconds.
However, the court didn't make that finding, did they? Did he?
Yes, the court in its finding stated...
But the court determined they were all attempted.
They were all attempted, correct. But these are facts to support the court's...
I understand, but
decision.
He obviously did not believe that witness, or he wouldn't have found attempt, as opposed to rape.
All right. Well, I think that there is no question that the trial court found that in all these, J.H. did attempt to use his fingers to insert it into the rectum of these various wrestlers. There was a second attack on T.C., where J.H. also instructed E.K. to hold him down. T.C. was kicking, and he said, and T.C. stated on the record that J.H. split his legs open and inserted his finger. And it hurt worse than the time before. And he also told him, quote, don't tell on me, otherwise I'll do it worse, end quote. Right? This is not a wrestling move. I don't think there's any question about it. It's not a wrestling move, but an act of intimidation and attempted rape.
Do you agree with Mr. Butler that this is a specific intent crime?
Because of it being an intent, I mean, because of being an attempt, yes. One of the things that in his reply brief that J.H. complains of is that T.C. Doesn't bring up this threatening till later on, doesn't actually mention it in the grand jury. I think that is less significant than whether the act actually occurred. And other witnesses to account of attacks on T.C. included T.L., D.K., L.H., A.D.H., R.F., J.H. himself stated he admitted to skinning T.C., quote, more than once. J.H. has used this term skinning as code for when he inserts or attempts to insert his finger into their rectum. T.L. was the victim in count four, eighth grader, 103-pounder.
Does the trial court make any findings on credibility? I'm just trying to find it. Normally, a trial court will make findings that, you know, this witness is not credible on this issue. You know, he does say on this number six, TC's testimony was substantially contradicted and materially inconsistent with the testimony of other state witnesses. Is that comparable to saying he did not, that he didn't find TC credible?
I think what you find, Justice Meyer-Henry, as you continue to read through both the memorandum and the findings and conclusions, is that the trial court does briefly address the fact that it took in consideration the time that took place, the actions that took place, and did do a weighing of the credibility of the various witnesses. Also mentions that J.H.'s witnesses who came in. Obviously, it was not specifically set out witness by witness as to a particular weighing. Though the trial court does walk through witness by witness for each count of the evidence that it did find. J.H.'s counsel brought up that A.L.H. had very contradictory testimony to the fact that this was strictly messing around. I think if the transcript is examined carefully, you'll find that ALH actually had very equivocal testimony regarding this. On page 344, ALH specifically stated that it would have been easier if it never happened because A, he would not have been picked on by the kids, B, he wouldn't have had to move to another school, and C, he wouldn't have had the question of whether he could wrestle or not that season. In count four back there, T.L. testified that J.H. inserted his finger one half to three quarters of the length of his finger into his rectum. He stated there was no skinning move that was being conducted on him. Count six and eight involved D.K., who was a ninth grader, 135-pounder. The first count against him, he said he was sitting against the wall when J.H. was looking at D.K., talking to some others, and then ran after him, held him down, and D.K. testified that he inserted his finger approximately an inch into his rectum. He said he was yelling and squirming to get away.
Now, the counts that weren't found, he didn't find him guilty of all the counts, correct?
Of the an attempted rape, no, the rape charges, no.
Okay.
In the second charge involved a school bus.
So the ones that are missing are the rape charges with this particular victim. He found attempted on each count.
Yes, and count eight, on count six, count. And count eight for DK.
Okay.
Yep.
And is that true of the others too?
Yes, the ones that were found, he adjudicated, were all attempts.
Okay, so there were no attempts that were not adjudicated guilty?
No.
Okay.
The second charge involved the school bus. They're coming back from a wrestling tournament. J.H. walked up to DK and told him, "If you say anything, I'll hurt you." Brings him to the back of the bus, pushes him to the floor, assistance with another wrestler, and again inserts his finger about an inch deep into his rectum. J.H. is laughing as DK says he's screaming. All right, this is, and he was threatened that if he continues to scream, he said he'll hurt him. Okay, this is not a wrestling move. This is not skinning. Okay? DK testifies that since he was wrestling since sixth grade, he's never been handled like this before by another wrestler, or ever had a wrestler insert his finger in his rectum like that. While they were in Nebraska at a wrestling camp, J.H. told DK, one time confronting him and moving him towards a corner, to suck it up and take it like a man. Why does this matter? This is in Nebraska. It matters because it shows an ongoing action by J.H. to intimidate and attempt to rape younger, smaller wrestlers. Because DK testifies that he sees the look on J.H.'s face and he knows what's going to happen. He starts calling out for the coach. The coach comes and nothing happens. Why is DK not concerned about performing an approved, taught-by wrestling move in front of the coach? Because that's not what's happening. J.H. complains of DK that his threatening was not mentioned at the grand jury. Yet J.H. does not address the fact that R.F. also testified about the bus attempt against DK, that A.L.H. testified regarding the wrestling room attack against DK. J.H. himself states he is sure that he skinned DK, but then goes on to claim that it wouldn't have been his intent to insert his finger into the rectum. A.L.H. was the victim of count 17, a ninth grader, 112-pounder, sitting down against the wall in the wrestling room. J.H. acts like he's going to wrestle with him, drags him out to the mat. He tries to get away. Again, another wrestler comes and helps hold him down. And A.L.H. testifies that, quote, "he's trying to stick his fingers up my butt," end quote. All right? A.L.H. states that there was no wrestling move called skinning going on or a butt drag. A.L.H. also testifies that he's been wrestling since third grade and he's never had a wrestler insert his finger in their rectum. A.L.H. is also an eyewitness to J.H.'s attack on T.C., R.F., D.K., and T.L. He also saw J.H. Kiss his brother on the lips. There was the remarks made that A.L.H. testified about that it was just messing around, but on redirect, on pages 342 and 343, A.L.H. stated that he did not want J.H. to stick his fingers in his butt, and he thought it was, quote, gross, end quote. He also testified, as I mentioned earlier, that it would have been easier to say it never happened because he would not have been picked on by the kids, had to move to another school, and also run the risk of not getting to wrestle that year. His brother, ADH, was a victim in count 18, a ninth grader, 103-pounder. He mentions how JH kissed him on the lips once, and also he was sitting alone against the wall when JH grabbed him, laid him down on his stomach, and started trying to stick his fingers, quote, in his butt. He said he was resisting, but the coach came and JH stopped. Why did JH stop if he is merely performing a wrestling move that that very coach has taught him? Because there was no wrestling move going on. This was, again, another attempted rape. He also, JH, told ADH not to tell anyone. ADH testified that he'd been wrestling since third grade and no one else had touched him this way. ADH also testified that JH attacked TC, ALH, and kissed TL on the cheek.
Is that in the findings?
I'm quoting from the transcript, Your Honor.
Yes.
I'm quoting from the transcript in page 361 and 363.
The trial court didn't put that in the findings, correct?
I would have to review the specifics of that count, but it did cover the incident. Laying on the stomach and the sticking the fingers in the rectum.
Let me ask you about the corroboration. The court found, and we've said, you don't need corroboration, but is this different when there are other people always around in each one of these allegations? None of them took, correct me if I'm wrong, almost all of them took place allegedly when other people were there observing it, correct?
Well, I guess a wrestling room environment, there could be people wrestling. It's not everybody is necessarily looking at one individual or watching what's happening. As we're seeing one...
Well, the corroboration is normally when there's a rape charge, it's two people and nobody else is there to corroborate it. Is this different in that all of them take place kind of in more of a public atmosphere, in that one is in the, some of them are in the bus, some of them are in a little room where there's other people there? Does the corroboration we normally apply with rape actually apply in a case like this, where there are people observing it, or there are people around?
Well, Justice Meyer Henry, I believe that there was corroboration. I believe an examination of the evidence hearing will find that there were other wrestlers who said, yeah, I saw him, you know, tackle this guy. Yeah, I saw him try to do this to this person. There were other witnesses to that. I think when we're also looking at corroborating evidence, we need to look at J.H.'s statements himself. He stated on page 780 that he only was skinning people, okay? That only when he was skinning people would he ever put his finger in anybody's butt. This is his statement. Anybody's butt or near it. He also admits at page 791 to admitting to skinning TC more than once. He also acknowledges that he may have drugged other wrestlers to the back of the bus, but then went on to claim that he was just giving them noogies or sternum rubs. When he asked if he denied that some of the boys were being held down when he came over to skin them, he did acknowledge that one time he did recall that. And that's on 805. He acknowledged that he remembers kissing ADH, 794. Why does that matter in an attempted rape case? Because there's this ongoing harassment. There's this ongoing intimidation that also keeps these victims quiet. Why does it matter at wrestling camp in Nebraska that he goes into one of the rooms and it was testified by TC that he, quote, took a crap in the dresser drawers of some other wrestler's room? Why does that matter? Because it's ongoing control, intimidation. As I mentioned earlier, none of these victims, 103-pounders, 112-pounders, none of these guys are 185-pounders, the heavyweights. But these are smaller victims that are intimidated, harassed. So I think there's plenty of corroborating evidence when you look at what they said. Specifically, J.H.'s statement that he read into the record as an answer that he'd given to DCI agent Severson during a previous interview. In reading his own answer, J.H. quoted himself by stating, quote, I can understand where that would be, that wouldn't be wrestling, and it wouldn't need to be used, and I never said that it wasn't wrong. I never said that I didn't do anything. I never said that I didn't do anything, and I never said they couldn't take offense. I think when we look at J.H.'s statements, I think when we look at the testimony of the other wrestlers, I think when we look at the victims themselves and their statements and some of the details, the court had plenty of evidence, corroboration, and to make the ways that they did and determine that attempted rape took place. Count 21 involved R.F. And he testified to two attacks, one where he was pulled away from the wall of the wrestling room and, quote, J.H. just stuck his fingers up my butt, end quote. And he didn't get inserted into the rectum, he said, but J.H. covered his mouth. The second involved a bust when they came home from the Flandreau wrestling tournament. And he said he was grabbed by the hand, taken to the back of the bus where J.H. was, put down on his knees, his stomach on the bench of the seat of the bus, and J.H. then inserted his fingers into his rear end while J.H. was covering his mouth. These are not wrestling moves, all right? These are not anything to do with wrestling. This is intimidation, harassment. This is attempted rape. And when looked by the standard of the court, that it doesn't engage in the resolution of conflicts, testimony, the weighing of evidence, or the determining credibility of specific evidence or specific witnesses in Hague, and that it views the evidence in the light most favorable to the prosecution, and a determination whether any rational prior fact could have found that the elements were fulfilled, the state would ask that this court affirm the adjudication of J.H.
Thank you, Mr. Stroman. Mr. Butler, you have 10 minutes, sir.
We're in a position where we seem to be saying that we, from the evidence, know better than the alleged victims what happened to them. There's nothing that he said that contradicts clear and explicit testimony from two of these young men, who's ALH and ADH. Nothing that happened to them they thought was inappropriate. And I'm sure they're considering the context in the wrestling room, doing what young men do. If it was in the band room, it might be a different thing. But it's in the wrestling room. Nothing that happened to them they considered inappropriate. When he made reference to ALH, or was it ADH, saying we had to leave school, I think that that calls for some comment. At the time of the transfer hearing, the principal, Mr. Meyer, the superintendent, Tracy Olson, and three other wrestling coaches all testified and presented evidence in general as to JH's character, grades, and how he did as how he was as both an athlete and a student. That testimony was across the board very favorable. After that hearing, parents of the wrestlers making the accusation, this is in the record, Mr. Meyer testified to it, came to the school. It was at Christmas break. Ordered their kids to throw their wrestling uniforms in a pile, and they withdrew them from school, and accused Mr. Meyer of testifying without a subpoena and that he should never have gone. That's why, well, he did have a subpoena because I gave it to him, and they pulled their kids out of school. When we want to consider the context that as adults we've got it figured out and the kids don't, ALH and ADH both said they considered him a friend until a father of one of the other accusers, TL's father, came to them in August and said, you've been raped. And they testified, and in particular one testified was at that point in time. Up until then, he considered J.H. a friend and a good person. That changed his mind. It wasn't anything that happened to him. It wasn't anything J.H. did. It was the influence. And when you go back, you still have to ask. The state says this pattern of intimidation that was going on. Do you really think, and I ask this fundamental question, that could have taken place over the course of an entire year, and not only did they not tell a coach, a parent, but they didn't even talk among themselves, and four of them are related and friends?
Mr. Butler, you know, we can't retry the case. You know, and all you're asking for us is to substitute our judgment for the circuit court that heard this.
Right, and which this...
And, you know, there is conflicting. He recognizes that. I read the wrong one before, but he does recognize that. And attributes it to young minds not remembering or something to that effect or remembering things differently. And so he, although may not say credibility necessarily, he talks about that. I mean, how can we come in and we haven't seen any of these people or heard their testimony, watched their demeanor, how can we substitute our judgment for what the trial court did?
Well, in fact, there's certainly precedent for this court having reversed adjudicatory decisions where the trial court is the fact finder. I mean, it does happen. And you still have to say, is it rational, the decision of the court, when taking and looking at the facts? If I just say, I'm the judge, I believe the state's witnesses, and I don't believe the defense witnesses. That's my findings. You're never going to touch me. So then I go back and say, well, wait a minute. The chief accuser, 15 years of age, and you want to say, well, it's youth. Did his youth explain the fact that he made a false and, I think, outrageous allegation of my client dropping his pants and sitting on two people's face, which he later completely recanted and never happened? Is that just, well, we write it off to you. That's what young people do. They make stuff like that up. And never address it in the fact box. You just say, we'll write it off to you. The court says it's understandable they didn't report it during the year. The question being, why is it understandable? How can there be almost systemic brutalization taking place and nobody sees any evidence of it throughout the entire year? Is that a fair question to ask? But even more importantly, on the issue of do the facts support the decision, the question has been raised, do the facts support that J.H. had the specific intent in his mind to penetrate, and not in the context of what might otherwise be an understandable set of circumstances. That's why I said, don't consider the case in the vacuum. He's got a coach that says, when you're doing this, you put pressure on the area. So then you go, well, that, but you can't do that when you're screwing around. You can only do it if we've got a match. Is that, but the point is, as I look at that, I still go and say, what's his intent? In his own state of mind, and as J.H. testified, I never intended to penetrate, but I did intend time to put my hand where it was and apply force. He agrees with that. You know, Mr. Jorgensen, the wrestling official, made, I think, were some important observations about wrestling. And he said, in the context of wrestling and your force and your movement, things happen, and you're getting a handful of whatever you can get a hold of. I can't imagine that it doesn't happen. He's speaking of penetration. But nobody ever looks at it like that. Nobody thinks in those terms of, well, did it go up my record? Well, nobody thinks like that. You're out there competing. You know, combat situation. You're just wrestling aggressively. And I'm sure it happens. He adds, there's constantly hands in places that people that are not familiar with wrestling would say, that's disgusting. But people that are familiar with wrestling know that that's just part of wrestling. Your hands are going to be in places like that, and there's nothing sexual about it. It's just wrestling. I think to try to draw a distinction between at what point is the goofing around not considered wrestling and versus when it's considered acceptable sporting practice. And there is not one piece of evidence in this record that will explain how all this occurred, and in a time frame of only several minutes between when they get out of school and when they're up there and their coaches arrive for practice, and no one knew, not even these people talked to each other. I suggest to this court that that corroborates J.H. When J.H. said, nobody ever said anything to me, nobody went to a coach, nobody said that they were hurting, and he said, if anybody had, I never would have done it. So does that evidence corroborate his statement regarding his intentions?
See, to me, it seems like the point of difference is where you have a skinning move and someone may very well inappropriately or appropriately try and change the momentum and have his whole hand be in the opening of somebody's anus. Whereas when you're on the bus or you're in the wrestling room, you're not talking about the whole hand in the opening of the anus. You're talking about, in some cases, one finger, one half to three-fourths of the way into the anus. In another case, there was it went halfway in, I believe, or something like that. You know, that's completely different than the whole hand causing the guy to spin around when the guy's already down and somebody's holding him on his stomach. You know, what kind of a skinning move is that when someone inserts his finger in his anus?
Well, I just would note the court never found that happened. So to the extent it was claimed, the court did not find there was ever penetration.
No, but he found it was attempted in several instances.
Yes, he did. And if the standard of review, if what the standard of review in fact means, so long as the trier of fact, in this case the court, paints with a broad brush and says, I find him credible, and to the extent there's discrepancies, I discount them due to age and passage of time, you're right, I have no chance. But I think there must be some obligation on the court to address not mere inconsistencies, but irreconcilable conflicts in the evidence. He noted, for example, that C.E. corroborated a number of the claims of that he was one of the youngest. His charge was dropped at the time of trial. He's the young man who testified to the grand jury that Mr. Hunt never, J.H. never did anything inappropriate, but once looked at him and he thought he was going to do something. The same thing you're talking about the Nebraska incident, where he looked at him and he could tell by the appearance of his face he was going to do something. But C.E. is the one who testified at trial that he sat along with several other wrestlers and watched E.K. while J.H. held down T.C. teabagging. And it was several other wrestlers right there with him, a foot to 3 feet away. All of the other wrestlers denied it. T.C. never said J.H. was involved in it. And he says, that's my corroborator. That's the young man I believe. And any of the older wrestlers who came in testified, or teammates of J.H., he discounts, by and large, their testimony, saying they have a bias to their screen. I think there's something more involved in finding facts than that, especially with seven attempted rape convictions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Butler. Court will be in recess for 10 minutes.